Hello, Cinefans. I'm Kendall Kruver, and this is Watching Classic Movies. Eleanor Powell was Hollywood's best female tapper, but she isn't nearly as well known as screen hoofers like Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. My guests Paula Broussard and Lisa Royer are working to fix that cultural oversight with their book, Eleanor Powell, Born to Dance. Having been dancers themselves, they offer a fascinating perspective on this one-of-a-kind star's style. We talked about the uniquely skilled Powell, who was as engaging as a person as she was a performer, and Paula and Lisa's own relationship with her in her later years. Welcome, Lisa and Paula. I am so excited to have you on today to talk about Eleanor Powell.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Kendall.
Anyway, we were talking before the show about how my introduction and your introduction to Eleanor Powell was the wonderful MGM compilation musical, That's Entertainment. You two saw it in the theater, and I saw it on broadcast television as a kid. So tell me about that, about how you felt when you were first introduced to Eleanor Powell.
Well, for me, I hadn't really seen too much in the way of musical film when I was younger, and just like The Wizard of Oz and some odd Shirley Temple movies, but I was a dancer, and I was so struck by this woman when she came out, and her way of dancing, her way of tapping was something like I had never seen before. So every time she would come on, I would say, "Who's that?" And my friend would say, "Well, that's Eleanor Powell." And again, I guess I had trouble recognizing her. She just kept striking me over and over. And after the movie was over, I said, "I've got to find out more about her. She's awesome."
Well, it's interesting that you related to her as a dancer in your first kind of view. Paula, what was your reaction to seeing Eleanor Powell the first time?
I think it's about the same. I was also a dance student at that time, and it just struck me, you know, I've never seen tap in that fashion. And I'd never seen just the style, which was so unique to her. And Lisa and I worked together at that time, and that's how we, you know, we both like came back from seeing the film separately and we were saying, "Wow, Eleanor Powell." And it was like an instant, like, yes, you know, it was, wasn't she wonderful? And neither of us were familiar with her. So yeah,
just so that planted the seeds kind of this interest.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, the thing that strikes me is that none of it could have happened if her mom had decided to bring her shy daughter out by you're doing Girl Scouts or something. You talk about this in the book, how they chose dance to get her kind of more immersed in the world. And she didn't even like tap at first. She kind of felt like she was forced to.
Classical she, all the way. Yeah.
Definitely. She classical with acrobatic. In fact, that's what struck us both. Her classical training was evident when we saw her. And when I had the same experience, when you take classical ballet, it's hard to tap. And so she was just like, "No, I don't want to do it."
And tap at that time was a very showy, Broadway-y, you know, kind of a presentation. And she just was a little bit of a snob in that way. Like, "Oh, this is, you know, all this noise, you know, it's not for me." So yeah, definitely.
So it basically seems to come down to one session with her teacher, where he gave her one-on-one attention and weighted her down around the waist. And that's where she kind of found the style. Mm-hmm. Now, yes. As a dancer, how do you respond to this style of these kind of heavy-footed?
Well, that's displeasing about it when they're really clunky. Ruby Keeler, bless her heart, is pretty clunky when she dances. Although I've seen a video of her when she was in the 70s when she did No, No, Nanette. And she can really dance, but she didn't have that refinement that ballet can bring to a tap dancer.
So it was a mix of finding her groundedness with that weighted belt and the lightness of the ballet.
What's different, what's hard is changing weight in tap. It's very difficult to do that. And that's where the sandbags and the weighted belt came in. And she said, and he also took her ankles and went back and forth over and over again. And so she just practiced that for hours and hours and hours until she finally got it. And it was like a light bulb moment where she finally got it.
ballet, you're always, you know, pointed toe, you know, strengthen your ankle. And in tap, it's the opposite. You know, you have to have a loose ankle to make the sounds, to make that those motions. So that was part of it.
It's striking me how much more valuable this book is because you two bring that experience with dance yourself to it, that you can understand what she was going through. And I mean, another thing about it that I found kind of almost devastating was how badly it hurts your body to practice the way that she did. She was so devoted, but I mean, I didn't realize you could get an infection in your feet from tapping. I just never thought about that.
It's funny. Yeah. She had a terrible problem. And she mentioned that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can imagine that when you're on point dancing ballet, but tap, you don't really think about that. And she had told us that they had practiced so much when they were doing a ballet number for Broadway Melody of 36, that their feet were just bleeding through the shoes. But when we saw all these instances of her having lost toenails and blisters and all the agony she went through, we were like, oh man, this was really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that when you have one little blister on your foot and you're trying to walk, how badly that hurts.
Right.
Just try and imagine dancing like that and doing 5 shows a day.
That is a really good way of putting it because it helps you to understand just how intense that was and what she was doing. And I mean, it's just amazing to me. So it took her about 3 years to rise to being basically the queen of tap on the stage. So at only 19 years old. So
no, not even that. She was 16 when she got in her first show follow through.
Okay.
And she had been tapping for less than 6 months. And at that point, the Dance Masters of America came along and they were judging to find the best female and male tap dancers. And so they had a technique where they would go under the stage because they didn't want to be swayed by the look of the person. And so they would only listen. And so she won that actually in 1929.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah. But the 3 years was to perfect her spin.
The top spin.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is something that I had noticed in looking at clips of her online. So when the two of you mentioned it, I thought, oh, okay, this is a thing that was. So what was so unusual about doing this as a tap artist? Why was she the one doing it and not really anybody else?
It's not just like a pirouette. It's that she does precise taps at each point of the turn, which is absolutely incredible to keep the momentum, to make those rhythmic sounds as you're turning, and it's still smooth and still fast and incredible. I haven't seen anybody do that. And to the number of repetitions that she does, perfect balance it requires, you know, absolutely perfectly centered. One little, you know, to the right, to the left, and you know, your turn
you're
is
off.
Yeah, exactly.
And she stops on a dime.
Yeah. With her hands presented perfectly. Yeah.
With the shoulders down,
right.
The arms relaxed.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Looking like it's no work at all.
Exactly.
No work at all. The only one that really makes it just that relaxed to me is Bill Robinson, which is interesting because he was a mentor for her. And probably, I mean, I don't think anybody comes close to Bill Robinson. There's just, it's another stratosphere. But she was probably as close as anybody was ever going to get. As far as the screen tappers, I couldn't tell you about the stage. Mm-hmm. So tell me about their relationship.
They were friends from their time on Broadway. Well,
before
in New York. Yeah. And in the early days, they would be invited to go to, not invited, but they would be paid to go to parties and entertain a lot of the rich people like the Vanderbilts and the Astors, all those really rich families in New York would have these big society parties. And so they would invite live entertainment. And they both had this reputation for being the best tappers. And so they would go to these parties and he would wear a long tux and she would wear a short version of a tux. And they would dance probably separately and together, which is the only time that they were actually permitted to.
I'd love to have seen them together.
I know.
I can't even imagine it. There's so many losses because of racism, you know, sexism. But that's the one where I really have a hard time even processing it, because it would have been just remarkable.
Yeah, definitely. And she would come to the Cotton Club. And Paula, you can talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had what they called celebrity nights at the Cotton Club on Sundays. And all the, you know, the local Hollywood celebrities, or in that year, those year, early years, Broadway, local New York celebrities would come and visit and, you know, sometimes get up and perform. And she would come and watch him. There was a particular party they had at the Cotton Club where he pulled her up on stage. And, you know, that's the only footage that we know exists of them dancing together. We were lucky enough to see it because Fayard Nicholas of the Nicholas Brothers had home movie footage of that exact moment. And she had told us about that. And we thought, oh, wow, wouldn't it be wonderful to actually see her dancing with Bill Robinson at the Cotton Club? And lo and behold, when we were lucky enough to see his home movie footage, he hadn't looked at it in 40 years. There it was. There was that moment. So wow. It was pretty incredible to see.
It was short. It was tiny, but it was powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just imagine. Yeah. I mean, you're mentioning the Nicholas Brothers. I think I have to say, like, equally my best ever musical numbers is the Stormy Weather number, yeah. which yeah. any human would find impressive. And then the other one is Broadway Melody of 1940, that final tap sequence with the stair and Powell.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I've seen that so many times that I could quote the taps in it like a Gen Xer quotes yeah. The Simpsons. You know, dun 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 dun. I mean, it's in my head. I mean, it's just interesting that you could tell Astaire was kind of really thinking or really working when he was with her, and I had never seen him work before.
Yeah,
that's accurate.
Yes, definitely.
So, what was your take on their working relationship? What were the dynamics there? You know, was this a great thing for them to be together?
Yeah, I think they were both initially a bit intimidated because they were up on that high echelon of tap, you know, both of them respected by that point. And, you know, everybody had been talking about pairing them together for several years. So it made perfect sense that it's like matching two prize fighters. You know, that's kind of what we equated it to. So, yes, she was scared to meet him. He was scared to meet her. And it took a while. I'll let Lisa go into the story about their first practice session together.
Well, she always used to tell it that it was always, they were very formal. Mr. Astaire, Miss Powell. And they were so intimidated by each other that they had a lot of trouble just getting down to work. And they would have their pianist come in, her pianist come in, and he'd play the music and they'd say, could you do it again? And it took them a long time to finally put their tap to the floor. And finally, she said, she had an idea. She said, oh, let me show you a step that my teacher, Jack Donahue, the guy who taught her with the sandbags, taught me. And so she showed it to him and he said, oh, that's great. And then they started, the ice was broken and they were finally able to work together.
Both of them, each of them, you know, were used to doing their own choreography and solos. And so that was a bit also intimidating, like, oh, you know, how are we going to do this? And I don't know mm-hmm. if I can, you know, do his style and vice versa. And that story is so funny because it just mm-hmm. goes to show you, no matter how talented you are, you still have that feeling of there's someone that I respect more, you know, and it's mm-hmm. just so impressive to work with them.
Yeah. And that they're both all about the work. They're not, they're not egocentric. They're two of the kindest uh-huh. people in Hollywood and they're together mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. trying to not step on each other's toes. So I love that it was just a dance move and suddenly let's get out of our heads and get to our feet. You know, let's just start this thing like doing. So can't go any further without knowing about how you met Eleanor Powell and what that relationship was like.
Well, yeah, I mean, it happened first. I mean, I had a brief meeting with her first. And then I went back and told Lisa, you know, guess who I, you know, happened to, you know, was at a show or whatever. And And then, you know, the anticipation was there, like she's actually still around and accessible. And then we saw that there was a birthday celebration for her at a local theater called the Gary, which was kind of a
hole in the wall
house. Yeah,
it was
and,
very small.
And so, yeah, and we saw, oh, you know, she's going to be there, you know. So I'll turn it over to Lisa now.
Yeah, for me, it was super frustrating because I kept missing her everywhere. I would hear that she had been somewhere and I missed right. it, including the time that Paula saw her and I didn't. So we had gone to this theater, this little movie theater. They were showing a retrospective of her films. And at that time, it was not easy to see her films because there was no, they weren't out on video. I don't even, there were
there
videotapes.
Wasn't video then. Yeah, really.
There was, but nobody, you know.
It was enormous.
Right.
Yeah.
And expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Betamax. So,
yeah. We had a Betamax. I had a Betamax. Anyway, so we had gone to see one of her movies at this theater. And the owner said, oh, she was here last night.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was my reaction. Oh, no. But don't worry, he said. Next week's her birthday and we're going to have a birthday party for her. So come back then. And so right. we did. And my memory of it is I finally got to see yes. this lady oh. and she was so gracious and so kind. And she yeah. spent about a half an hour talking to us uh-huh. and we exchanged addresses and everything like that. And she said, oh, you've got to come over and you've got to see my film clips.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Wow. I would
be happy to do that. And so we were writing to each other for months. And then finally, but then the next
gifts on,
part, on Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of developed into a friendship pretty quickly. By the time the next year rolled around, I was working at the Gary as the manager. We had another birthday party and Paula was there too. And, you know, it was awesome.
And I'm going to tell, I'm going to interject this little story and Lisa's going to cringe.
Okay.
But we, because at that point, you know, we were kind of part of the Gary and we decided, let's, you know, we got to have a, you know, it's got to be a big presentation. So we, in our, you know, dance student hubris, decided we have to like introduce her with a little dance chorus line. So we did a little like tap step down the aisle.
Me,
Lisa, and another friend, and we were called the Powlettes, and we did like this little, you know, step
presentation,
whatever, you know, a little, yeah, and just, you know, and the owner was like, okay, whatever, you know.
Oh, I think he
and
was
everybody
happy.
There was big fans, so it was kind of all in fun.
Yeah, it was
and,
fun.
And
yeah.
she must, yeah, it was fun, and she and we had T-shirts with her photo on it. And
oh.
So and we I mean, had, she was just kind of thrilled with all these young, you know, students that were really, you know, mm-hmm. interested in her at this point. So it was fun.
I mean, can and you imagine? Had, I mean, there's no video or anything, and these young people are discovering you.
Yeah, yeah. So she
yeah,
was,
it's she true that thrilled. That's entertainment gave her a new period of discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
She was pretty much forgotten by that time, and when that came out and made such a hit, and so many people saw it, and realized that there was another tap dancer that we don't talk about too much.
Right, right.
It yeah, was just yeah. really, she had people writing to her and she would always write back. And
but I mean, it's just, it's an interesting through line through her career is that she didn't make a lot of enemies because she was too busy making friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that, that's funny that you should say it that way because when people would bring up about, you know, her, you know, why isn't there a biography on her? And she would say, well, my life is so, you know, boring. Basically, it's just, you know, about, you know, loving people and working hard and all that. And that's basically, that's her life. That's mm-hmm. her viewpoint on life in a nutshell. So, yeah.
I was just going to say, at that time when people were doing biographies or autobiographies, it was the publisher wouldn't touch it if there wasn't some big scandal,
right?
You know, to make it interesting to the public. And I think she would be pleasantly surprised now to see that there is a biography there that doesn't have scandal and it just talks about hard work and loving people and, and people seem to enjoy it.
Yeah. And I like how you two do address everything that needs to be addressed, but you keep it focused on the work, really, because who she is, of course, matters a great deal and what she experienced, but there's just so much to be said about the work. And that is what's really exciting, you know, that's why we're here. But at the same time, wow, I was interested in hearing about this nice lady. And I was interested in hearing about her mom, the anti-stage mom. I mean, there are only 17 years between them, I think.
Just barely.
Right.
But she really made it all possible. It's just a wonderful part of the story.
We were fascinated with her, too. We never met her because by the time we got to know Ellie, Blanche was ill. And she was kind of very reclusive at that time. And then shortly, within a couple of years, she died. So we got to see firsthand how that affected her daughter. But just the more that we read about her, I mean, Ellie used to say she's my partner. She was like my best friend. She's more like a sister than a mother. She was with me every step of the way. And when her mother died, she said, I can't bear to see the films because it conjures up memories of her behind the scenes with me.
Right.
And it took her a long time to get over that. And so as we were doing our research, we saw a lot of Blanche behind the scenes over and over again. And we were just even more taken with her. She's an amazing person.
There. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was just such a remarkable relationship and really not even like your typical mother-daughter relationship, let alone stage mother. You know, that just the fact that like when she needed her to back away, she did on her own. You know, she was going out on a date or if they were making plans for a trip, she'd be like, you know what, this is what you need. And it would be the best for her. She wouldn't be focused on herself and her needs or kind of clinging to a daughter. I mean, that's just amazing on so many levels.
Right.
You know, considering how it often is when there's a mother and a star. So
that's true.
Yeah. So before, I can't let you go without getting, you know, okay, this is the thing. I don't really have favorite Eleanor Powell movies. I have favorite Eleanor Powell numbers. But I did make an effort to watch a few movies I hadn't seen, you know, when I was reading the book. And I have to say there is something to be said for her screen presence. Maybe it's not so much the acting, but her screen presence is very pleasant. Her voice is pleasant. She was really meant to be seen. I see Bill Robinson that way too. Like, oh yes, you need to see this person.
Right.
So how do you two look at it? Do you have favorite performances or do you have certain movies that you really like and would recommend to people?
I think both. I mean, I think the Broadway Melody of 1936 would kind of meet both criteria for me because I think it's a really funny and fun movie. And the dual personality type of, you know, the dual role thing is so cute. And I love Sid Silvers. I think she, knowing the behind the scenes story of that movie, it just makes it more poignant. It's so triumphant for her, that last production number. And she is just effervescent. And I don't know, I just can't get away from that being like my favorite number.
Yeah.
So, Lisa.
I have to say it's mine too. And it always has been, even before we knew all the behind the scenes stories about it. I love the sparkly tux, but I think, I think of it sort of like you. I have numbers that I really love as a film. I love Broadway Melody of 1936 and Born to Dance, but it's the numbers that really, you know, speak to me. And it's a lot of fun to just, we've had people reading the book who've gone to YouTube and, you know, looked up the numbers as they're reading. And I think that's what people should do because then they can see what we're talking about. And she's just so impressive and, I like the number with Buddy Rich in Ship Ahoy too, where she's dancing and then she's doing the drumming with her feet and with the drumsticks. And that's really a big thing.
I really love that one too. It makes me think I wrote this down. The maestro Toscanini.
Toscanini.
Oh,
how he said your feet are a symphony.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And that number really brings it home. I think also just Broadway Melody of 1940, the way the taps stuck in my head like a song.
Yeah.
She really is a musical artist.
Mm-hmm. A percussionist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Like you were writing about the radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
She's tap dancing on a radio show.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hit.
Yeah. The sound, yes.
Yeah, they have to be so clear in your taps. And it's just so novel to think that that can hold the attention as much as when you're watching her.
Yeah.
And she also made a couple records, you know, two sides. Well, she made five sides, actually, where she was tapping as well. And that's pretty novel.
Yeah, I'd missed that. That's interesting. A record of lady tap dancing. I mean, she was singing
So it was with Tommy Dorsey, and it was in 1935 at the same time that she was doing that radio show. Mm-hmm. And so he was famous, but not to the degree he was when they did Ship Ahoy. And so she came and cut a few sides with him, with his orchestra. And so she sang in her real voice, not her dub voice, and she tapped.
And I do think she has a nice voice. It's
not
an MGM voice, but it's a nice voice.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I should add here that, yes, definitely go check out her clips on YouTube. But you two have put up a site.
Yes.
A YouTube channel, right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes.
And there are some really, it's a great variety on there because you've got early, mid, like it covers a nice span. So I'm going to put that in the show notes, y'all, so you can check that out too. Yeah.
Thank you. We're still adding to it slowly but surely.
But it's a good watch at the moment for sure.
Thanks. If people subscribe, they'll be notified when we put another one up each time. And we also have a social media site. We have an Eleanor Pell Born to Dance Facebook page, an Instagram, and we also have a group on Facebook.
Oh, you have a group. Okay. Okay. So I will be sharing all of that with you all. Mm-hmm. I guess I want to close just with, wow, what just an athlete she was. How brave you have to be a dancer. You know, you write about a number where she's on some slick drums at night.
Yeah. That was not intentional.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Not on purpose, but, and she's being flipped around after having surgeries taped up. I mean, this, how do more dancers not die? I guess is what I'm going to do. Like, it's amazing. Well,
I would say that not all dancers have that compulsion
that
to do
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the Eleanor thing.
Yeah, it was. She said, she always used to say, in my films, the first number is pretty tame. The second number kind of ramps it up. And by the time I'm the third number, they're shooting me out of a cannon.
Yeah. Yes.
Not literally, but.
And it got to the point where they would choose the order of filming the numbers in the order of
danger.
Yes, exactly. So let's wait to the end to film that really, really, number because she might get injured. You know, she doesn't care, you know.
You can go heel after, but not in the middle of production. Okay. It's expensive. Yes. Yes. So is there anything else that you just are burning to tell me about Eleanor Pell?
I mean, I would say that her comeback, which a lot of people don't realize was so extensive. And the level of tap that she did on those comeback years just kind of shows that she was finally able to be an artist at that point without the constraints of MGM, these fantastic production numbers and all these settings, learning how to rope and this and that and dogs. And, you know, it was her tapping. And by that time, she really was presenting herself as a musician. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we can't talk about that enough. So we were lucky to see a few clips of that time period, which the Academy has in their collection. And the sound, the beautiful rhythms, is just incredible. So, yeah.
Lisa, anything?
Yeah. Oh, I agree with Paula. That always struck me and impressed me, the fact that she did that comeback when she was 48. And she lost all this weight, and she was so dedicated for 9 months, you know, just working 6 to 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And she was so laser focused on anything that she was going to do. That's impressive. But maybe the most impressive to me is the person that she was. And there are few people that are like her that I've ever met in my life. She was kind, generous, and a truly good person. And we were so pleased to be able to write her legacy so people will know her and other people will remember her.
Well, you both did a beautiful job. It's an informative book, but it's also deeply moving. And, you know, I know that personal touch really helped in that area quite a lot. I appreciate you two coming on to talk to me today. So fascinating to
hear
about Miss
Thao. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To find ways to connect with Paula and Lisa and learn more about their book, go to watchingclassicmovies.com. Thank you to all who have recently rated and reviewed the show. I appreciate your support. This is Kendall Crufer, watching classic movies. Until next time.